if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will still say this was their finest hour.
We stand for Queen,
country, and video games. BRB UK.
Worse teeth,
better accents.
Hello, hello, and indeed ahoy hoy, and welcome to episode 351 of BRB UK. I'm Dan, I'm one of your hosts, I'm joined by Carmel and also Tim, and this is a really quick intro because Tim's got lots of stuff to talk about, which means that neither of us, Carmel and I, are going to have time to talk about anything else.
Should me and Tim both say hello at the same time?
Yes.
Hi! Hello.
Brilliant, good, time saved by counting down from three. That was excellent.
Excellent. I think we've saved a lot of time at that point.
We have, a lot of time has been saved right now.
Yeah.
You, dear listeners, have the advantage of a fast forward button. However, in the present, when me, Coleman and Tim are recording this podcast, we don't have mastery over the space-time continuum.
Although Coleman kind of does. He can, you know, edit it back down.
No, but not at the moment. He still has to sit through your drivel.
At the moment, you have to sit through the unedited version, which is even worse. Our listeners never get to hear that. So, you know, they don't know the pain that you really suffer through.
To be fair, as Tim's fully aware from the squeaky high-pitched noises that come out of my headphones when I used to edit at Tim's, I edit at 1.90 speed, so...
MLG Pro podcast editing.
PLG.
Oh, oh, oh!
No, wait, that's something else.
That is definitely something else, mate.
Okay.
Anyway... Talking of something else.
Something else.
Something else. Nintendo Switch Lite's in the house.
They announced one.
They did announce a Switch Lite. And it is, as we all expected, a slightly diddier Switch without removable Joy-Cons.
It's the PlayStation Vita Extreme. Now with Nintendo games.
And there's also no more of that hooking up to your television shenanigans. So it is literally Nintendo Switch handheld edition.
And it seems to be something that's more geared towards the Japanese audience than the Western audience. Because the majority of Switch users in the Western world, such as ourselves, are prominently playing on the TV. Whereas people in Japan are more prominently playing on the tubes and such, the bullet trains and what have you, because it's a handy device for commuting, and there is a lot of commuting to be done in Japan.
Got that right. But there's a couple of plus points to it. As far as I can work out, although there's no TV out, the screen on the unit itself, whilst maintaining the same resolution, is a little smaller, which means pixel density is better, which means the image will look a little nicer.
Oh, sign me up. I'll have 10.
I have to go for it. Well, they're only 199 Great British Pounds, we reckon.
So the new Switch price is $199. That's the only officially confirmed price from Nintendo. However, early pre-orders, I've looked in a few different sources, Game and Amazon and such, they're doing an RRP of £199. So there we go.
£199.
Yes, just £199.
£199.
And it's releasing on 20 September.
Yes. So there's actually three different versions of the Switch Lite, three different colours of the Switch Lite, but then there's a special edition which gives you a fourth colour as well, which comes out later. So on the 20th of September, we'll get the very sexy-looking yellow colour, grey, and the turquoise, which are inferior. I think the yellow one looks adorable.
I quite like the turquoise one.
I'm not sold on any of the colours, to be honest.
No, stuff you. You're stuck with grey now.
Well, there was quite a few people that instantly did mock-ups of a Game Boy-looking one. I was like, that's the one I want, please. Yes.
Yeah. You know they're going to be rinsing that kind of new versions of them for quite some time. But for me, I mean, one of the problems that people have had, I haven't personally had it with the Joy-Cons on my Switch.
The disconnection.
Disconnection is not going to be a problem when they're physically attached to the unit. But there have been people who have reported problems with analog stick drift or the sticks wearing out on Joy-Cons.
I get problem with both analog stick drift and disconnections, especially on my left Joy-Con. I don't know why, but...
Yeah, I think you've got the same problem I've got.
So my question is, my thought is that I hope they've upped the durability on the analog sticks, because you're not going to be able to just buy a new pair of Joy-Cons and whack them onto your Switch.
I found that the problem to get past the drift of the analog sticks was the case I was using, which was an official Nintendo case, but it was a kind of squishy case. It flattens everything inside the case, I found. So I've bought a much larger hard case where there's no kind of, there's nothing.
Vinnie Jones.
Well, it's not. It's
you've bought Vinnie Jones. There's nothing. And, he's told your Switch to stop drifting.
The problem there is I've already got the bigger hard case and I've never had the smaller one. So it hasn't been that issue for me, at least, basically. So.
Okay. Well, I found since there's more space, there's no pressure being made to the thumbsticks, then it solved the problem of the controller drift. And also, for some weird reason, it seems to be detaching the Joy-Cons less. And I don't know if it's just, man, was that tight case just really screwing up my Switch and I didn't realize? But yeah, that seems to have solved it.
The disconnection issue I'm having less and the drift I'm having more since the last update, I think. I don't know if that was coincidental, but...
All I was going to say is, just thinking towards this new light, I mean, could it be a major problem? Unless no one's taken one of these to bits yet, obviously. So we don't know if the analog stick hardware is the same. But if there is still the problem with drift, that could actually be a major thing against going to this model, even putting aside the fact that you don't have TV out and all of that. Although, I have to say, the one major thing that I do like about the Switch Lite, and I hope they can rectify with releasing slightly different Joy-Cons for existing Switch owners, is that there's a proper flipping D-pad!
No, sorry to dampen your day, but Nintendo have actually stated today that they have no plans to add D-pads to Joy-Cons.
Why not? They've done it in this one!
Maybe they've got a warehouse of millions of Joy-Cons that they know if they put D-pads on these things, then no one will go buy the original ones. Who knows?
God damn it, Nintendo.
Yeah, but all I want them to do is sell a left Joy-Con with a D-pad, and then that'll solve all my problems for me, and I can just buy one extra one.
Yeah, but then there'll be an even worse situation, where they'll just have a warehouse full of right Joy-Cons.
The right Joy-Cons that nobody loves.
Yeah, I believe if you go to Hori, do a pretty decent Joy-Con alternative that I've heard about with the D-pad and stuff. I was saying there was a fourth color as well to line up with the Pokemon Sword and Shield release that's coming out soon. There's going to be a Nintendo Switch, I see what I say, it's right, Zacian and Zamenta edition.
Bless you.
That's coming out on the 15th of November, which is a kind of grey one with coloured buttons by the looks of it. Weirdly, it doesn't come out with the game and comes out about a month before the game as well.
It does look nice, I have to say. I think that was my favourite of all the colour schemes.
Now, what a ringing endorsement. It looks okay.
I don't really care for the Pokemons. So...
Well, it doesn't care for you, Timothy.
Yeah,
that's fair. Would you like some other improvements, specifications made?
Hit me up with your specs.
Cool. So not only have you got the new smaller screen, but the system also, it weighs 0.61 pounds. And currently the original weighs 0.88 pounds with the Joy-Cons attached. And the battery life has been increased to 3 to 7 hours, which is an improvement over the original's 2.5 to 6.5 hours.
Is it just me? Considering they've taken the HD Rumble and the IR camera or whatever.
I think the HD Rumble's a fairly significant downgrade, missing that, I have to say.
I think it's rubbish.
Really? I'd say it's the most enjoyable vibration experience I've had in a handheld console.
I found HD Rumble, yes, for 1-2 Switch, that's got some pretty decent functionality.
How many ice cubes? How many ice cubes?
It's exactly that, or the ball rolling game. You know, those kind of things it's fine for.
How many balls are in there?
There's been no other practical use for that technology I've found in the Switch so far. And all it's made is, I play the Switch, I've got my headphones in, or I've got it muted, I'm on public transport, and then all of a sudden, people around me just hear... The HD Rumble is so strong, it just rattles the console.
But I think considering those two things are missing, it doesn't sound like, it's a sealed unit, it doesn't sound like a significant improvement in the battery life. I was expecting a lot more, no?
There's probably a couple of things that going into this. I don't know whether or not this is getting the same revision change of the kind of system on a chip that runs the Switch, because there's those rumors have been going around for a while that there's going to be a new revision of the Tegra chip in it, which is the brains and guts of the thing. But I've got a feeling that's not going to be a performance uplift. It may be an efficiency uplift, which is why you're seeing improved battery life, even if it's the same battery. But I think the major thing was that the only way to absolutely definitely patch the homebrew enabling vulnerability on the Switch was to move to a physically different processor. So I'd imagine that might be part of the battery life thing as well. But why you're not seeing a performance uplift?
I'd assume that is something that is included in the Lite version, because that is by all means a new product. Whereas with the changing the pattern for the original Nintendo Switch, that's something that they've had to file to the Federal Trade Commission, which we've seen reports of this week. You know, you have to get permission to change an existing product in such a way and still call it the same original product. Yeah, I'm assuming if that is the case, they're doing it to get rid of the whole homebrew market, then that is something we'll see in the new ones going forward, and then something in the new models as well. But yeah, what did you guys think of this overall? Because myself, I can see this as a plus in this market. If you've got a kid, you want to get them a Switch to play, you don't particularly want them to connect it to the TV because that's annoying. But then again, I find that this could be a cool thing if Nintendo finally get their act together and go, okay, you can have your profile on multiple consoles, you can switch your saves between the two,
it needs cloud saves.
I mean, basically, we have cloud saves, but it's just for the tied to one profile, one system currently. And they are developing something to allow you to transfer your saves over from your original Xbox to the new Lite version. But
original Xbox.
Wow, they are embracing crossplay.
From your original Nintendo Switch to the Nintendo Switch Lite. But you, whether you that's port back
across
and
your
forth,
saves from that TI-82 calculator you had in school to your Nintendo Switch.
Whether that's back and forth or just a one-way trip, that's what I'm not sure about. But if this was a more portable version of the Switch, I'd be more happy with that, you know, as a second console. But I don't know what your guys' thoughts on this.
I think it's going after the same market in some ways that perhaps the 2DS was, where it's a bare bones version of the Switch. Whereas to me, my concern is if you've already got a Switch, I cannot see a reason to side grade, or whatever the right term is, to this, because you're losing quite a lot of the really, frankly, you know, unique things that made the Switch a really interesting system, like just being able to drop it in a dock and change it into a kind of a TV-based console. Karen, what's she going to do with roof parties?
Oh, no, because there's no kickstand.
There's no kickstand.
Yep, no kickstand.
There's no kickstand in it either, mate.
It's all right, though. You can now, according to this advert, though, you can go to rock climbing clubs and skateboard parks and neither rock climb or skateboard, because you can just sit there and play
your
Switch.
Well, all I can say is, thank Christ I'm having a midlife crisis. I need to go and do me some of that.
I love that ad, because it's kind of the governmental warning of the 80s come to truth, to reality of, hey, look, kids, look at all the exercise you could be having. What's that, a Nintendo product? Let's all sit down and play video games. Sod that exercise.
Ah, I can feel the deep vein thrombosis growing as I speak.
Like you say, as an existing Switch owner, the trade-off isn't quite in balance enough for me to want to go and spend the money on this. I don't get enough in return. I seem to lose some stuff that I already have. The problem for me is I was quite interested in an all-in-one unit where I wasn't going to have continuing Joy-Con problems kind of thing. So yeah, I don't know. I'll keep an eye on it. But for me, as I said, it's too much of an investment for not enough of a return, basically. But as you say, I don't think it's necessarily catering to us. I think it is catering to widen out that audience, maybe the second console in the house for someone else. And, you know, that's even more of a problem. If you've already got one connected to a TV, you'd definitely don't want two connecting to a TV, I guess, possibly. Like you say, expanding the market in the same way that the 2DS did, with going into more children's hands and other people. I guess also the advantage is you won't lose the Joy-Cons and stuff like you could otherwise, basically. So,
do you have a wobbly Joy-Con? One of my Joy-Cons is wobbly.
I think both mine are wobbly, technically.
Are we still talking Joy-Cons?
Yeah, we're still talking Joy-Cons. No, mine, you know, you have to push the button to pull the Joy-Cons out of the Switch.
Yes, I do know that.
Mine don't. They just out the Switch.
Oh, wow.
They come and go as they please.
But they're fair weather Joy-Cons.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, we probably ought to start moving on in the agenda, because Tim has
a million things to talk about with Timothy Hibbs.
Oh, God, the X Factor's here. Right, Tim, do your worst, mate. Coleman, give me a ring in about an hour.
Sure, no worries. You go lie down,
and I'll
mate.
Come back to the mic and just close the show out. How's that sound?
No, come on, let's be fair, because Tim's actually got stuff we need to talk about.
Timothy, give me the hands-on review of Brighton.
Well, I went up to develop Brighton. I don't know if anyone remembers, but I went up
I have
first
a question.
Last, yes.
Since when do you know anything about developing games?
I don't, that's why I went.
Right, so do you now know how to develop the games and are you going to make us our millions?
Team's now working with Peter Molyneux on his next project.
For anyone that doesn't know, develop is very much a game developers conference, basically. So I was invited along last year to pop along and check it out and kind of report on it and just... Yeah, it's one where I do get to get hands-on with some games, and I'll talk about a few games in a sec, but it's also just going along and seeing the event and on a businessy side of things, it's networking with people and catching up with people and seeing they're on, more interest for the show kind of things. It's, going along to the event and seeing what the kind of talking points are at the event and what's happening there this year, basically. So, the conference itself is centered around, there is a kind of expo, with things on display and different companies showing off a few games, but then one of the major parts is all the actual talks and stuff there that people are giving, various keynote speakers and stuff that were there this year. I didn't attend as much of that as I did last year. I only went to like one talk just to get a kind of flavor of it. It's one of those things where it is very much talks being given to game developers and on that sort of subject. The one I went to was the Google Stadia presentation, just to see what kind of information they're currently giving out to game developers.
So what kind of information are they currently giving out to game developers?
Well, that's the thing. It was generally this is the pipeline for submitting your application to develop on our platform. Even from a perspective of, myself being the slight layperson, there wasn't very many, there was a question and answer session at the end, and there wasn't very many questions of those that he could answer, basically.
What kind of questions?
Where do babies come from?
Particularly, a lot of game developers were keen to find out about funding, if there was funding available, and they didn't seem to have any information readily available on that. When you think that was something that they would readily bring to the game developer conference kind of thing. And then various other sort of funding was the main question that he kind of couldn't talk about. He was very much, I am a technical person from this side of things. Even then he didn't necessarily be able to give a solid response to any of the sort of technical questions in some cases.
What about my chuffing email with my founder's Stadia name?
That's that. But for me it was a bit worrying that there did seem to be, a very... I would have thought they would have been doing this last year, basically, on the level of information they were giving, based on how they were bigging it up at the presentation and stuff. And it does make me begin to worry that they haven't got as many things in order as they possibly should do. The guy that gave the presentation was perfectly, amicable guy and came off kind of well and stuff like that. I'm not having a go at him or anything he presented, but it's just, I'm a bit worried in their timeline of if they're just... they presumably reached out to other developers and this is just getting more people on board. But I would have thought they would have been better prepared with questions about funding and a few other things to be able to question. The way they dodged those questionings, I'm guessing there really isn't any funding. It's just, this is the application to apply on our platform. And that seemed to be the message that they were coming across with, basically.
So I'd be interested to see what the funding model's going to be like. So essentially, the developers just... compile the game, give it over to Google, and then do the developers have to pay for the server time that it takes to run on Stadia?
Well, that's one of the things that he was talking about in the presentation. And basically, that he gave clues as to how how you actually develop for Stadia, basically. So they're talking about being able to, like, you have an instance where, you know, that is what the player would see kind of thing, but then you can also, they also run up other instances that you can purely develop in, basically. So, and it was just introducing that to developers, and obviously, as I said, they presumably got other developers already on board, and this was kind of just expanding the number of people they're adding to that. But yeah, that type of information, and you know, that was something they seem to have well organized, and they seem to be, yeah, be able to create other instances and be able to have like teams work on it remotely from other areas and stuff, and be able to like coordinate and like there's various talks about like being able to package things together and stuff like that. But yeah, it was. Yeah, from that side of things, as I said, that seems like that's something they've got well organized, and that was the key point of the presentation. I was just surprised that there wasn't a bit more readily available information around those areas other than the presentation itself, basically. But yeah, I mean, obviously from you know a good perspective, it's good that they are seemingly you know trying to make it as easy for developers to develop on the system as possible. But yeah, as I said, doesn't look like they're going with the funding thing. It's just this is a way to release your game. The one thing that they were selling is, you know, obviously is one of their USPs is once you've developed it for this instance, it will run on all the devices that Stadia will go on. And they were pushing that quite heavily, obviously, as that being an advantage that you don't have to, you know, have various different ports of the game, basically.
But I mean, my understanding is that they're not actually shy of the number of applications that have gone in. There's like well over, you know, there's multiple thousands of applications of people wanting to be part of it.
There's every Ubisoft game in existence will be
Pong.
Pong will be on there.
Yep, it's going to be lovely.
But yeah, I mean, the other questions that the developers were asking were generally about, you know, what happens with the profit sharing side of things. And again, he was basically saying, look, I'm here to present the technical side of things, so you're not really the business things, just go to the website for all that sort of information, basically.
So were there any technical questions?
Yeah, most, like, there was a few, but, like, yeah, not really anything that's, anything that we as the end user would necessarily care about or is anything sort
well,
of particularly noteworthy? Sort of.
I think I probably would. I mean, it's going to, for me, I think the interesting, the thing I would have liked to hear about is how what their approach to minimizing lag is. And also.
Well, yeah, but that's what I'm saying. They didn't talk about any of that aspect of things. What they were presenting here was how do you get your game onto Google Stadia as a game developer, basically. That was the
center
point.
Send a hard drive to Google.
And like I said, he was asked a lot of other questions that he had to go, I'm not the person to answer that question, basically.
That's
or we're not saying that at this time, basically.
That is
and
a
like
little
I
odd.
Said, there should have been, I appreciate the position that he's in and the reason that he went to go there. I just would have thought there would have been a bit more detail on the side. And as I said, the way he sort of did and didn't answer questions, I suspect that there's no funding going on there. It's just literally you can release on our platform and then we will, you know, take a share of the profits for doing so, sort of thing. But yeah, anyway, I don't know to that side of that because he couldn't necessarily present on that. But yeah, overall, you know, it's something where there was a lot of talks going on. I hope to catch up a few more of them online because I think they're putting some of them online possibly at some point. But yeah, like generally, you know, that's the major reason why a lot of the game developers there. For me, it was more about catching up with some game developers, seeing, you know, what the people have got in the pipeline and catching up with a few people that we've spoken to on the show before. Just incidentally, Rich Metzen, who was previously on the show talking about Off-Grid, if you remember that, Coleman?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, we played at previous EGX.
Yeah, sure.
He had a little, little bump in the road kind of thing, but they're getting closer to release now. And yeah, he was just telling me a bit more about the game and stuff like that, so catching up with him. We'll hopefully get him back on the show at some point to catch up with the game and talk a bit about that. But yeah, just and a few other developers and stuff, and yeah, got a chance to try a few new games, and I'll talk about a couple of them this week, and then we'll leave a couple of them for next week.
Aren't you a tease?
Talk about Pacer. Yes, yes. Talk about Pacer. Talk
yes,
about
I know
Pacer.
You want to talk about that.
I think Tom wants to hear about Pacer.
I will talk about the two P's this week. Then we will go with Pacer first. So yeah, Pacer, very much Wipeout esque type game.
That's the public access to court electronic records, I believe you'll find.
Oh, awesome.
Okay, well, there you go. But yeah, it's very, and it's not too reductive to say this, but it very much felt like Wipeout, basically.
That's good, because it looks really a lot like Wipeout as well.
Yes, yeah, has it got anything to do with progressive aerobic cardiovascular endurance runs?
No. but yeah, but it
can
is,
I just say boom, by the way.
It does look really slick and run lightning fast. The other thing I'll say is,
has it got anything, are there any of the original Wipeout peeps involved in it?
I don't actually know that for a fact. Actually, I'm not sure. That's one thing I didn't question the developer on. But
it so similar.
It really does, and I wouldn't be entirely surprised, because that you're obviously Sony Liverpool and they're, you know, UK based. So I wouldn't be entirely surprised if that wasn't the case. And yeah, like it's definitely what they're going for. I don't think it's too reductive to say that it is very much like a Wipeout, and I don't think they will be, you know, disheartened to find that's exactly how I found it.
I'd be interested to hear about their process for acquiring customers, enhancing retention, because that's going to be a major thing that they need to do to ensure a successful software launch.
But generally, the other thing I'm going to say, very much like the first time I played Wipeout, I'm like, I like the look of this game. It goes really fast when I don't crash into things and not being a terrible driver at it, basically. I was not alone there. I think the majority of people I watched, in fact, everyone that I saw playing the game, to the point where I asked the developer if the AI was a bit too hard, I was like, does everyone come 10th, which was last place?
Do you have a novice mode I can turn on?
No, he was like, there was one person that came first earlier when I was talking to them and they weren't watching the screen, but we're pretty sure that's a bug. Everyone else has been 10th. I was like, okay, that makes me feel better then. That's fine. But literally, it was quite hard, but by the midpoint of the race, I was getting a bit more used to it and getting a bit more into the flow of the game.
So what system were you playing it on?
PC, I'm guessing.
Yes, but it was on a pad, and I want to say it was an Xbox pad, but I can't remember. I played various things on PC, PS4 and Xbox. But it wasn't
a program-assisted console evaluation and review, is what you're saying.
But it is coming out on multiple platforms. I was bugging them about the possibility of
a VR version, please. Can I have a VR version, please? Is it on the Switch or is it on the PSVR?
I did say to various developers, I do need to get this T-shirt made for going to conferences. I'm just going to get a T-shirt made that's going, when is the Switch port coming in, and is there VR support? I'm just going to get that T-shirt made so I can just point to it rather than having to ask the question again and again. It's something I would like to see with the game. The developers said there's no plans for it at launch, and kind of teased the fact that it might be entirely possible if the game's successful enough, possibly. Something I'd like to see do well. If you're a Wipeout fan, it's definitely one to keep your eyes on. It does feel a bit like a spiritual successor. It's got a few slight differences, but generally, it totally reminded me of especially the recent polished, upgraded Wipeout. It possibly looks even better than that. It just looks really quite nice and crisp, and as I said, really does move at a very fast pace, which is one of the key things for this game. I didn't get to fully try out all the weapons because I was behind most of the people at the same time, but it seemed like similar ideas to what we've seen in these sorts of games before, you know, like wave that shoots out in front of you and various different things. As I said, one took for Wipeout fans to look out for. It very much had a similar control method where you're, you know, air braking into the corners and stuff, and having to slow down a bit and air brake and speed up again.
And let's not forget, Tim is indeed our personally active computing exploration resource as well that we send out to these things. So,
that is good.
I must say, by the close up screenshots that they've released, it does look very, very pretty. And by the gameplay videos, that does look like one to be playing on the PC and have a better frame rate and, you know, a better visual and all this kind of stuff. It looks so
sexy.
That's
my boy, Coleman. You're coming around to my way of thinking.
No, I mean, it just looking at the fast pace of this game in particular, yeah, it just looks so sexy. And yeah, as you're the resident Wipeout fan out of the three of us, you know, I hope this is this spells out good things for you, especially. And it doesn't end up like the Roll Cage spiritual successor that I got.
Ah, yes. Well, didn't they do an update to that?
Yeah, they keep patching it and trying to make it okay. It's still not the game I want.
They made it all a bit more like this, but if they haven't designed the game that way, then I don't think it's a go. But yeah, as I said, like from my hands on, other than the fact it was a bit tough, it was good. And I don't mind this type of game being a bit tough because, I remember Wipeout being that way for me the first time as well. But yeah, enjoyed it anyway. So yeah, one to look out for. The other P game that I will cover for this week, beginning with P, not a game about P, fortunately.
Parappa the Rapper.
Pokemon Golden Showers?
Phantom Covert Ops, which I don't know if you remember, but got a lot of buzz coming out of E3, where a lot of people got to get their hands on it for the first time. This is the slightly crazy VR game, Oculus Quest, I don't know if it's Oculus or just Quest, but it is unique to them for now, at least. I think they've got some sort of deal on it for a period of time, I don't know. But yeah, it was also my first chance to really have a go on the Oculus Quest as well, so that was quite good.
But in all seriousness, what do you reckon to the Oculus Quest?
Right, I really like the freedom that it gives you, and that might be enough for me to get past the slight issue that I have, that I still don't find the headset as comfortable as I do with the PSVR headset, even though...
Have you got a funny-shaped head?
Yes.
Possibly.
Yes.
But I just find the Oculus just seems to sit very, like, high on my head, whereas the PSVR kind of, it encompasses it and sits on the front of it, it doesn't seem to bother me as much, kind of thing. As I said, I think that's something I can get past and get used to. I'm just used to the different headset. I also think the advantage it has over the PSVR headset is the fact that it's not necessarily more that it's more lightweight, because it actually feels like it's putting a bit more pressure on your head, but there's less to it, I think it will get less sweaty, which is a very good thing. It means I can play more VR in summer, basically, because at the moment that can be a problem.
Rather than setting up your own personal grief cave on the front of your face.
But back to Phantom Covert Ops. You may have heard of this game without necessarily remembering it. This is the one that sounds like a crazy concept because you're in a kayak the whole time, basically.
Why wouldn't you be?
Well, because it's a kind of sneak 'em up, action adventure game. But you spend the whole time in a canoe or a kayak. One person canoe thing. But yeah. I can see why this game got a lot of buzz. It just works, kind of thing. It's a really nice kind of mix. The setup is that there's a kind of a canal that goes through this enemy's base, and you are working your way up this canal to kind of go up and sabotage the base or whatever and infiltrate the base. The part that you're doing in the kind of level that they were showing in the demo, your major objective is to sabotage a radio tower. You're generally moving between kind of different areas. Literally, you've got kind of bits of kit around you, so you've got your... silenced handgun just on your chest, and you can just move your hand to your chest, pick that up, and then start shooting people, kind of thing.
Just don't pull the trigger too early.
Yeah, you've got a submachine gun on your back, and then you've got a sniper rifle sort of stationed on the canoe on your right hand side. You've also then just got your paddle on the left hand side. So to paddle, you pick up the paddle and paddle like you would in a canoe, basically. That just worked really well. It just, you're seated the whole time, so it feels like you're in the right position. The one thing that I didn't realize was a distinct advantage of a canoe over like some other forms of transport, like say a motorbike in a video game, is that you can easily and realistically reverse. You can just back up quite quickly and stuff like that, which you can't always do easily in other games. But yeah, like as a locomotion method, like that was like, okay, you don't need to solve locomotion because this just works basically. And obviously that kind of restricts you to staying in the boat all times, but you're kind of like moving between like cover near the banks in like kind of patches of reeds. And then the enemies will find it a bit tougher to see you in there, basically. But then you're just trying to get the drop on them, get the position to kind of sneak up on them and take them out. The only problem I found, and to the point where I actually took the headset off and asked the dev at this point, I don't think the sniper rifle was working well for me. Because someone else said it was really good, and then I literally couldn't see anything through the scope. The scope wasn't working properly.
I have not found a satisfying sniper rifle on any VR game thus far.
They're not great. I think it's the you know, and oddly enough, I thought this was something that would be easier on the aim controller, and it's not. It's much better when you're aiming on iron sights than when you're doing sniping stuff that I found. But yeah, like you said, I think it's a problem that hasn't been solved in VR yet, and I thought this would do it, and it like other people said it was really good, but I don't. As I said, I don't know if it was working properly in the demo that I played, but I didn't use that. I ended up using the handgun for most of the time because it just got me silently past the people I needed to, basically. But then, yeah, like you'll then have to, near the end of the level, kind of find your way through to get underneath the radio tower and then reach up and physically pull the kind of connectors out to sabotage it, and then it all blows up basically. But yeah, like slight issues with the sniper rifle aside, that it's hopefully something that will be solved in the final thing. Really enjoyed it. I thought it was really good. It, as I said, the combo of being sneaky and being in a canoe sounds a bit daft, but it kind of works in practice. And I kind of liked just paddling around as well. That actually felt quite good in VR generally. So yeah, it feels like it's going to be a good potent mix and can lead to some good fun as well, basically. So yeah, looking forward to that as well.
That's Metal Gear Kayak.
Metal Gear Kayak. It kind of is. But as I said, works really well. And yeah, another thing added to the list of reasons why I want a quest, basically, put it that way. So yeah, that's a fairly good fairly good thing. I did see a couple of other games there that I'll talk about next week, but I will leave
Don't you threaten
for
me
now, basically. Develop.
You know how he feels about, you know how you both feel about that. Sort that, Tim.
But yeah, overall, I mean, it seemed like I didn't pick up too much sort of talk on the Brexit thing, but there did seem to be a background discussion, some discussions of people being a little bit worried about, you know, the state of online stores and discoverability. I mean, that's always a thing that kind of runs through developer chats and some things, but yeah, there seems to be more indie game developers that, you know, are a bit worried about how stores are going and how, you know, how they're curating things and that type of stuff a little bit more. But yeah, and I don't know. I didn't catch much talk of Brexit. There was some anti-Brexit, like, sort of things there with the, Stay with the EU, I think, is the campaign thing they were doing. But I didn't hear much talk of the actual developers themselves about how Brexit's affecting them or how they expect that to do. But I don't know. But anyway, it was an interesting conference and it was a good thing to attend. And thank you very much for inviting me along again this year.
Oh, you're welcome.
What? You didn't organise the whole shebang,
yeah,
Coleman.
Yeah, of course I did. Did you know?
Taking credit where no credit is due,
that's
Mr. Coleman.
Develop Coleman VR.
Develop Coleman.
Oh, and also there's one other aspect that I should mention just.
Of course there is.
Well, I just think for some listeners it will be relevant because I know there's some people in this position. For anyone looking in a job in the games industry, the expo and some of the other side of things, anyone that's attending the event can attend those. And some of the talks and stuff you have to pay to get into. but it's still possibly worth going along. There's quite a few universities and then just companies looking to actually hire people there as well. So if you're, you know, someone with a degree, you know, some sort of qualification in the games industry, or it's something you're looking to go into, it's a good event to possibly go along and be able to talk to the universities and the companies there about actually getting into the games industry and how to do that effectively.
You know, which university now does game development courses? Portsmouth.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Portsmouth University, baby.
I think, I'm pretty sure I heard someone saying that they actually do good courses.
Yeah, I've heard that. They said, so said the reps that I saw at a Comic-Con once that were recruiting like game artists and comic book artists and all sorts. Portsmouth.
True fact.
It's the jewel of the UK, so says I.
Yeah. Coleman. Problem is, it's at the bottom of a landfill.
Yeah. other things that, so says Coleman, would you like me to break up some Timisms with some points of interest?
I would love to, bearing in mind that was like 20 minutes of solid Tim.
That's okay. Right, so do you guys like Monkey Ball?
I love Monkey Ball.
Would you like a new Monkey Ball?
Maybe. All right, give me some new Monkey Balls.
Okay, so there was a new filing on the Taiwan Games Ratings Board.
My favourite games rating
exactly,
board.
Exactly, which yeah, points that there might be a new Super Monkey Ball for Switch, PS4, and PC.
It has been a while since they've released a Monkey Ball game, so I'm not surprised.
I think the Wii was probably the last one. And it wasn't very good, if I remember correctly, because of the motion controls kind of ruined it, but hey.
Don't ruin Monkey Ball announcement day for me, Coleman.
Also, actually, do you know what? I think a mobile port might have been the last one that came out, thinking about it.
Oh, yeah.
Top of
that
head,
seems
like an iPhone. I don't know about you guys, the only thing I really care about Monkey Ball
is VR, never, we know.
No. I don't really care about like the main game. It was the mini game that they had in some of the game somewhere with the flying
yes!
game.
Yes! Like, with the ball opened up into wings.
Yes. You go off the end of the ramp and then you open up the ball as his wings, as you say, and then you kind of glide down into the thing and you've got to land in the zone.
Love that.
That is brilliant. And I would pay like enough money to buy me a Super Monkey Ball just to play that game again.
I really thought you said I'd get enough money and I'd buy me a monkey and I'd strap that little fucker to a hang glider and I'd have loads of fun every day.
Anyway, so we don't know if this is a new game or just
a monkey in a wingsuit.
So we don't know if this is a new game or just some kind of HD remake, but there is
or a really weird cheese dream yeah. Tim's had. I don't know.
The filing includes both Chinese and Japanese titles for the game, which translate to Now Taste Good Super Monkey Ball and The Food is Great Super Monkey Ball.
Ooh.
So maybe some kind of food theme game.
Tasty Banana Monkey Ball.
Anyway, new Monkey Ball. I can't be wrong. There's also another rumor this week. Facebook might they're looking to acquire a game studio, and that they've got a Splinter Cell VR in development.
Oh, good, because there's not enough faceless, shady corporations in the games industry.
So apparently they're trying to acquire a new studio, and they've got some kind of deal going on with Ubisoft to start acquiring their IPs and turning them into VR titles, because we know Ubisoft, they worked on a few titles. They seem to have quietened down over this year, but
they haven't really there was nothing at E3 as well announced.
Apparently, according to this report from The Information, they said that Splinter Cell is currently the one that's in the works, and we could see an Assassin's Creed game coming to VR pretty soon after. And also, if you like faceless shady corporations, Dan, getting into the games industry,
my favourite ones are the ones that don't play tax either.
They're my favourite. So anyway,
are they the best? Mate, you're going to make me happy.
Yeah, old Mr. Bezos himself. They're working. Amazon Game Studio. They've announced that they will be leading development in a new free to play MMORPG or set in the Middle Earth. Portrayed in the Lord of the Rings literary trilogy. So this is meant to be a game that's been announced by Athlon Games last year.
Right.
And apparently Amazon have come out to say, look, we're heading this one now. So, hey.
Get on your bike, mate.
But this is a free-to-play thing, much in the kind of vein. They're looking at popular MMOs like EverQuest, Destiny, World of Warcraft, Planetside, and that seems to be what they're looking at to get a taste of this game. So we'll see how that goes. Weirdly, Amazon also have the Lord of the Rings streaming movie, streaming TV show that in the works for the Prime platform.
Well, that'll be a time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's not, apparently.
Really?
Yeah, the TV show is its own separate thing, and then this is based solely on the books.
Oh, that's odd. Yeah.
Interesting.
I thought that was weird. But hey. Maybe they'll go, hey, you've enjoyed the TV show. Now play the game. Live in Middle Earth and...
Be confused about very similarly named characters until you've read the movies and watched the books.
Enjoy these...
That was the right way around.
Play as a dwarf and unlock loot barrels. I mean, surprise mechanics. Yes. Sack of money from EA because they've copyrighted that term. Anyway. That's all your news this week.
Good. Right.
Are you feeling substantially newsed up?
I certainly am. I'm ready to. I'm at my fill of news and ready to slip into a post news coma.
Are you ready to take a dip in the lake of Tim?
Indeed, I'm dipping my little tippy toe in Tim. Can you feel it? Just a tip.
Yes.
It's just a tip, mate.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, Tim, I know you're dying to talk about Catan on the Switch because you love board games and video games, and that is a nice little happy medium for you, but. As a man who grew up in a naval town, I need to know about the Man of Medan preview event because you were on a ship, apparently.
I was on a boat.
You were on a boat, not a ship.
Right.
You're on a boat.
You took a photo of a ship.
Well, it was more of a ship.
Which is a gussied up boat.
But I had to look this up because it was labelled the HQS. And I've only ever seen HMS, and I had to look up what HQS was. Any clues? I didn't know. Apparently, it is a headquarters ship.
Yeah.
Right.
So there you go. But it was the HQS Wellington, moored up on the Thames, just down the road, just not quite opposite the London Eye, basically, for people that want to know where it is. But
bizarrely specific set of locations, Tim. Thank you.
Well, you know, hey. They had a preview event where they were showing off part of the game. And very interestingly, we were NDA'd up to the eyeballs with this. I could not talk about this publicly before today. And you may have seen a few articles.
Well, today we're recording or today this gets released?
Today that we are recording. Oh, okay. The embargo at 3 o'clock today. So there has been some news about this and stuff as well. But if you haven't seen already, basically, and to give it the full title, the Dark Pictures Anthology Man of Medan. So this is the first game in a series.
No. Me, Dan. You, Tim.
Okay. the first game in a series of five planned games in this thing, but it is also kind of the spiritual successor to Until Dawn. It's from the same developers. It isn't a brand new engine. It's kind of a remade from the ground up, but very much in the same style of the high cinematic presentation. Very high quality captures of digital actors. But it's got different actors than we've seen in Until Dawn. But yeah, generally that's something that we've known about for a little while. That's something that myself and Carmen have had hands on, as talked about before. But the thing they had us along to the event to show off specifically was the multiplayer. And this is something they've managed to keep under wraps till now. Mm-hmm. But there are two flavors of multiplayer in the game.
Strawberry and lemon lime.
Strawberry and
Kit Kat. I got to get some hands-on time with the co-op, which I'll come back to in a second, because that's the thing.
A lovely shop. Makes me feel like I've saved the planet every time I go and buy some sprouts in there. It's a wonderful place.
We got to play about the first 90 minutes or so of the game, so we got to play a good chunk of the game. But they also announced, where we didn't get to play in my session at least, there is a 2-5 player like movie night mode where, and I didn't see exactly how that works, but I'm guessing different people get to vote on it in the similar manner to how you and I played through Hidden Agenda.
Yeah, and how Telltale Games started to go before they died.
Mm. Yeah, so it's a definite continuation of that, and they've put that into this main game, which I think is a really, really good idea, and I can see that working really well. The thing we got a bit more hands-on time with, and I'm glad we did, because I was a bit dubious going in, but having seen it in practice, I'm now much more on board. Basically, the co-op is you are just two of the characters involved in the story, And sometimes those paths cross over and you're, you know, seeing the same events and seeing the same things happen. But that's not always the case. Like, and at least the way they had it set up in the event, we had headsets that could have been communicating with each other. They deliberately had us not doing that. And you can play through the whole game without actually talking to the person on the other side. Like, it meant that the person I was playing with at the end, I kind of came away and went, did you go down on the dive? The whole thing takes place on a boat. You're kind of going out as a group of divers. Despite some protests with the person that owns the boat, you're kind of diving down on sunken World War II aeroplane, and you haven't sort of gone through the proper channels to kind of to do so, basically, and go and have a look at it. Didn't know this until the end. I actually assumed that, because there's four different people and they kind of go different ways, I assumed I was with the person that I was partnering with. That wasn't the case. They were actually up on the boat while I was on the dive down below. So they didn't get to see the whole scene that I saw play out, and I didn't get to see what happened on the surface up above as well. And I had decisions I could, without spoiling too much, I had decisions I could make as I was coming up to the surface that could have got me up to the surface quicker, but slightly more dangerously. Basically, you know, not waiting the amount of time to acclimatize to getting out of the water sort of thing. That meant I could have possibly seen more than I did, but I didn't. And I only got to discuss that with the person that I was playing afterwards. And that, for me, just added two really interesting depths. Like, the one thing is that there were bits that we could communicate on, and it kind of had systems within the game. Some of that didn't seem entirely well communicated until you'd necessarily got something like that wrong. Like, there was a bit where we both had to, like, barge our way through the door, and we both had to, like, yammer on the A button just to kind of do it, sort of thing. Incidentally, just for that, I was playing on the Xbox One, just that they were showing it off on this. It was also available to play on the PS4 on the day, but just happened to play on the Xbox One. Yeah, it kind of plays out very much as Until Dawn, if you're familiar with that. There's, instead of a butterfly effect that it talks about in Until Dawn, there's a bearing. And there's lots of kind of nautical references in this. The actual major thing happens on a kind of ghost ship as well that you encounter. Again, don't want to give too many spoilers away from the story and kind of the beats there. But yeah, you know, some stuff goes on and you end up on this kind of ghost ship. It's got similar beats to Until Dawn enough that I'm like, yep, I'm fully on board. I know what's going on. Like, there was one portion when I was on the smaller boat that we started on, the kind of diving boat, that I was looking around the environment and I took a bottle of perfume type thing out and just had a look at it, and then I put it down. And then in a later scene when I was defending myself, that was available to smash over someone's head. And that obviously wouldn't have been there had I not found that object and put it in the place where it then was, basically. So there's similar things to that. Like, if you remember in Until Dawn, in the demo they showed off about that, there was a pair of scissors that you could find in the demo that you could then stab into the psycho as you kind of encountering him, basically. So it's got similar kind of beats to that. You've also got the kind of beats of like picking up objects in the environment and studying them to find out clues and all that type of thing. They also had pictures in the environment that you could look at, and they gave you kind of premonition type things, again in a similar manner to Until Dawn. Like, a lot of this is going to be like a bit like Until Dawn, but for me, that's very much a good thing. I really loved Until Dawn, and them making more of that. This seems to be going with the kind of, you know, ghost ship horror kind of World War II-esque kind of ghosts story type thing.
Well-known genre.
Well, you know, that's a fairly established American horror story trope kind of thing, no? Yeah, like, I kind of like the angle that they're going with it and where they're coming from with that. I'm definitely on board and definitely keen to see the game. But I wouldn't have known that I was so interested in the co-op. As I said, not only do you get that kind of water cooler moment type thing of being able to chat with the other person of, all right, so in your story, what happened in that? Oh, you weren't even in that scene at all. Okay, well, I did this in that scene, and that meant you could do that. Oh, right, okay. And, like, those moments I find really interesting. But also it gives the game an element of replayability as well, because it means that I want to see that story from both perspectives, and then you can do things differently within each of those stories as well. So, I mean, it's a game that just adds to the replayability that we already had available there, basically. And I don't know if they'll make it so that you can be different characters at different times when you're just playing through the one player or not. That's something that I didn't get to question them about, basically. But yeah, as I said, like, that's something where they've added two modes to a game that I was already on board with, but, like, make a lot of sense, and I can see adding a lot of fun to the game as well, basically. So yeah, I'm really extra keen on it now, basically.
Jolly good. And when's so, out?
That's out August 30th.
Ooh, okay. Soon.
And as I said, it's going multi-platform now, so it's not just the lovely people from PS4 that get to experience it. It's horror for everyone, basically.
Excellent. Put the willies up, everyone. That's what I say.
If I remember correctly, we've got a preview video on our YouTube channel from when me and Tim previously went to go play this. I can't remember.
Okay,
is that my caption or is that your capture, Tim?
Not sure.
You'll see one of us suck at the game.
Yeah.
Hey, it's probably Tim. Tim, you've got one last thing to talk about, but mere minutes to talk about it.
And then we're done, Dan. You're okay.
Yep.
Okay.
I might have had a micro nap.
Danny,
in that
are, you
last
okay? Are you okay? Are you okay?
Are you okay,
Danny?
Okay. But yeah, this week I have mostly been playing Catan on the Switch. Anyone that doesn't know Catan, or Settlers of Catan, as it was known before the rebrand, is a kind of...
I think you'll find it's pronounced Catan.
Catan. It's a board game for...
Dude, no need for the accent. Come on, Jesus.
Two to five people, depending on what set you're playing with. I
have a question.
But, yep.
Five people, but can all of those people be in the same room for Switch Catan?
Right, I will come on to that, because that is a bit...
Uh-oh.
But this is a digital version of a tabletop board game. Catan is widely known as kind of one of the three modern classics, along with Carcassonne and Ticket to Ride. Catan is a kind of trading game where you're gathering resources and using those resources to build more cities and towns and roads.
So it's a bit like a mini tabletop Civilization.
Yeah, it's not quite as involved in that. It's more just a trading game where you're gathering resources and building a kind of engine to get you more resources, to get you more victory points, basically. And there's various different ways to get victory points. Building a city or a town gets you them. Like, there's cards that you can use, like knights, that will allow you to rob stuff from other players. And also give you like one victory point, and the person that has the largest number of armies, as long as you have above three, gets like an extra victory point sort of thing. And then you can have like the longest road, so whoever's got the most sequential roads in a row, I think you have to get above five to qualify for that, but then once you do that, you get a victory point. And there's a couple of other ways to do it, but generally it's a resource management game and a trading game where you can trade those resources with other people at the table, or trade between the bank, and you can kind of upgrade the rate at which you get a return from the bank as well, basically. So yeah, it's generally just resource management and trading, but it's a widely well liked game that is kind of simple and effective for what it does. Generally takes about, I'd say, 45 minutes to an hour when you're playing with a like full set of four people kind of thing. But then yeah, we get onto Catan and what they've got with this digital version.
Sheep.
Basically. So the Switch version...
Ooh, I love me a sheep.
Wheat.
There are some other console versions available. And I think, I presume PC as well. But generally, it's... it works really well on the Switch. I was kind of keen on it on the Switch because it means I, play it on the go and stuff. And I thought this is a good game for that type of thing. I forgot my Switch on the way to the vote yesterday and was quite cross, but I have managed to play quite a few
games. That sounds like a catastrophe.
For me, I think the first game I played took me 2 hours to lose. But now that I'm kind of up to speed on the kind of interface and what's going on with it, games are taking me about 45 to 50 minutes, basically.
Hey, do you know what happened, though, when Tim forgot his Switch? He got all cantankerous. Never mind.
Yeah, anyway. But that's mostly three-player games, and I don't think a four-player game would be significantly slower than that with the AI, possibly. Though there might be a bit more trading going on and a little bit more waiting time. But generally, it's got a campaign mode that sets you up with a series of three-player games, and I think that's probably well-balanced in terms of, you know,
like a
time
campaign with a story, or just a campaign of, here, do these?
They're trying... But they really, yeah, they shouldn't have bought. Like, it's so bare bones, it's not really worth it. They're basically, the people that you encounter, they're trying to give a bit of personality and flavor to. I'm not sure they should have bothered for the return of what they gave you. But what they're doing is basically you're going, they've got like a map and you're going around the map, various different islands, and they've got various different challenges set up on the different islands. And it's basically different layouts. To start with, it's very much the kind of hex-based... it's a hexagonal grouping of hexagons, basically. It's kind of the board setup as default. But then as you go further into kind of some of those islands, those maps kind of deviate from that basic shape, and it kind of makes it a bit more difficult to deal with. It's not quite so symmetrical, basically. But whenever you're playing the game, or it depends how you set it up, but generally the tiles are kind of randomized a bit, so that, you can put a city on the kind of the border of like three tiles, and then you'll get a return whenever the number on that tile comes back. Is rolled by one of the players, basically. The only exception to that is when you roll a 7, like the robber gets active and anyone with too many resources has to discard some of them.
Why we can't have nice things, Coleman.
That's why we can't have nice things.
No, we can't.
Hey!
As I said, the campaign is generally kind of going around different maps and setting different scenarios and different things. They've taken me, as I said, between like 45 minutes to a couple of hours generally, and a lot of those have taken multiple attempts to get through. So there's quite a lot of game time there in terms of what you're doing. I did have to kind of I knew the game and I knew the game wellish, but I'd forgotten kind of some of the finer points of the the kind of strategic side of blocking off some of your enemies and going, you know, making a road between ports and stuff like that.
Sounds important.
Yeah, it is important. Ports are very good for you, and you can also, if you get up to 3 ports, you get an extra victory point for being the harbor master, basically. So I like the campaign and what they've structured it. As I said, the story side of thing is very forgettable. They're giving a little bit of character to the people you're playing against, but hey, who cares? But yep.
Let me stop you there. Surely where a game like this should shine is multiplayer, local or otherwise.
Well, that's my slight issue. I haven't tried the online yet, and I will do that before I do a write-up, which I'm planning to do that at some point. But I wanted to kind of get up a bit more to speed on the game and how that was working before it did. The one really disappointing thing is there is no local multiplayer whatsoever.
What? Yeesh. Wow.
So, yeah. I don't know if that's a decision made to kind of appease the actual board game publishers or something. I don't know what the thinking is there at all, because it seems
that
like something,
seems unbelievably dumb.
Yeah, it seems like
a conscious design decision.
Really, that seems horrible.
Yeah, it's a very noticeable omission that I didn't even think about it not being there, basically. So yeah, that's one thing that is definitely counting against it, basically. hopefully it's something that I patch in later, possibly. But I don't know if that's a planned addition. But in
terms of online multiplayer, bearing in mind each game is about, what, 40, 45 minutes?
Yeah, and that's my other issue there as well. Like, it's going to be 45 minutes plus, and then, you know, like...
Are people going to have... Online players have the patience to wait around for other people while they're considering their turn?
Well, just on bringing one other thing back into it as well, the Man of Medan thing that I was playing as well, like, that had a really weird thing
where... No. You, Tim, we've been through this before.
That had a weird thing where you can pause it, but then it's on a timer, and it counts down until it automatically restarts.
What if you need a Wii?
I guess so people can't grief and just leave it on pause indefinitely.
Ah.
But that seemed a bit weird. Like, what if you wanted to, you know, just pause it for 20 minutes or so? Like, that seemed a bit odd. And, yeah, like, that's one of my issues with Catan is, like, I think the, you know, if you're sat around a table playing a board game with someone, you can go, right, let's take a break for 5 minutes and, you know, have a comfort break and get some food and grab a drink or whatever. Whereas that's a bit more difficult to do on a digital system, especially on the Switch, when I can't easily communicate with the other players I'm playing with as well.
But what about Nintendo Switch Online chat?
Cole, man, there's no need to be snarky.
We all know that's, like, not really a thing, Coleman.
Tim, it's easy. All you got to do is you got to subscribe to Nintendo Switch Online, you got to connect the phone to the adapter, and then connect your headset to the other adapter. And
simple.
Then play. Yeah, and it's easy as pie. You're online in 20 easy steps.
Which of those adapters looks like a squid again?
I believe that, too, is a hoary invention, so it's horrible.
Really?
But yeah, like, overall, Catan is a very faithful recreation of the digital board game. If you're not planning on playing it with other people in your immediate house, in which case you probably have a set of Catan anyway, I guess that's kind of the thinking. But then, I can see it having, a good place for you for that. It's reasonably kind of good value in terms of, if you're a fan of Catan, you will get a lot of playtime out of it, basically. The one thing I always worry about with the digital versions of board games is
folding
them up, yeah, that's never good.
Losing a bottle of pieces.
Yeah, no, well, that's not an issue with this sort of thing. That's that you are saved from that possibility. But yeah, for me, some board games I find are ruined by repeatedly playing the digital version, and that kind of ruining your ability to have patience to sit down and play with other actual human beings that take a bit longer to make their decisions and all that.
Well, humans are a bit rubbish.
Hey, but do you know the best bit of that particular game, Coleman?
What's that?
Whoever wins gets to do a little dance, and it's called the Catan Can.
Yay! He's back on. Hold on. He's back.
Thank you. Tip your waiters.
Yeah, there's something about the pace of this digital version of Catan that doesn't seem to be as much of a factor for. I don't know what it is, but this seems to not bother me in playing out at a similar pace to playing the actual board game. Like, games take me about as long as I would expect a three-player game of Catan to play, basically.
So, bearing in mind, right, the whole point of board game is to play with your mates. And if you're stopping along, say, train journey or tube journey or something like that, there's no local
multiplayer. And you remember your Switch.
And you remember your Switch.
And you remember your Switch.
And you can't pass between your mates. And you can't connect to online because, well, you're on a train.
Yeah.
What is the actual goddamn point of this game?
Well, there's the campaign and there's also some scenario bits that you can play as one player as well, where it kind of sets things up. But I don't really understand what they were envisaging as the difference between those two modes, basically. I haven't played with the scenario stuff as much. I've just had a quick look at that. But because there's been quite a lot of the campaign to play through, basically. But yeah, as I said, like, it does give you a lot of Catan-based playtime. Like, the maps being different is quite different. And so it does change. And also, part of the appeal of Catan anyway is that the board does change every time you play it a bit. I think it fixes some things in positions in some of the kind of scenario setups that you're doing. But generally, it's a game that plays a bit differently when the board is different. And when the setup of that board is different, it's different again, basically. So, yeah, like, there's some fun stuff as well. Also, it includes one of the expansions to the game as well that comes as part of the game when you buy it. There is also another expansion available on the store as
Catan
well.
Catan Vice City.
Yeah, I mean, I've generally haven't ventured that far in the board game world into the extra versions. Well, I've played more extra versions of Catan than I have. Like, I actually own the Star Trek Catan version Ray. Myself, because that's quite
Wrath
good.
Of Catan.
It's got like player powers added to it, and that adds another dimension that wasn't in the base game.
No, takes a Wrath of Catan.
Quite good. Wrath of Catan. I have to say that's quite good. That is quite good. They should have gone with that.
Oh, okay, hold on. Get half a bell.
Thank you.
But I've also played like the Game of Thrones version as well. But I haven't played too many of the actual general expansions. And so for me, at least, like, I didn't feel like I was missing something by not having that other expansion for what I played. And as I said, there seems to be quite a lot of playtime just in what you get in the base game with the initial expansion they give you as well. Basically,
I wouldn't mind seeing, and not to like throw this at you to cause you more work for your review, but I wouldn't mind seeing this in comparison to, say, like the mobile version of Catan on your phone or...
Yeah, and I'd like to see what you actually get in that, so I might actually do that for you and for the journalism's Coleman, and yeah, try and check that out.
Itching for a story. How much wood for wheat?
No, the standard...
How much wood for wheat?
Joke. No, the standard joke for Catan is, has anyone got wood for sheep?
That's brick-diculous.
Yes.
Oh, God.
Can we get to the end of the show? I can't wheat any longer.
Please.
Oh, God.
Right, Tim. Much though I hate to encourage you to talk even more. Tuesday is a Tuesday. Talk to us about the Tuesdays.
Please tell me we're playing
Tuesday
Catan.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Tuesday. This week we are not playing Catan. Oh. Well, we could be. There
Boo.
Were people playing Catan this week, I think. So it's fine. Although I think I talked them into playing Carcassonne. Anyway, but yeah, generally, if you don't know, each and every week we do an event called Tabletop Tuesday at the Loading Bar in Dalston. And
Tuesday.
Each and every Tuesday we have a feature game, and if you play that feature game that evening, you usually have a chance to win a copy of the game. And this week is a usual week where you can win a copy of the game.
Wow.
This week's game is, a bit of an odd one. It's a game called Small Islands. I'd be interested to see how this one goes down. I'm hoping it has English instructions. Because the box is not in English.
Jersey.
Carrying on our exploratory theme, we're exploring this game.
Cayman.
And exploring some small islands. So, yeah, this should go down well, hopefully. We'll have more details up on the site tomorrow. And you can find more details on meetup.com. Search for Tabletop Tuesdays.
Is that tomorrow the day from recording or tomorrow the day after the show comes out?
Definitely.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Good work.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Both of those things.
Cool.
And maybe neither. but yeah, hopefully it'll be information up on the top left-hand side of bigredbarrel.com, or as I said, on meetup.com, search for Tabletop Tuesday and join the other 1,750 people that have joined us there. And join us this week to play some board games and possibly win one just by playing it.
That is Small Islands on the 16th of July at Loading Bar in Dalston for Tabletop Tuesday. Do-do-do-do-do-do. Oh, I like that.
What? Kind of mildly asthmatic old man wheeze.
We'll workshop this
right.
One.
We don't have any shout outs this week, do we?
Just Nelly on Twitter.
Nelly. Sorry, I got a little bit carried away there. Anyway, I think we're nearly done. Are we done?
Yeah, sure.
Time has ceased to have meaning for me,
sure,
this episode.
Sure, 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 sure.
Too much Tim for your liking, hey?
Yes, in fact there was. So I think we're about done, but not before we remind you to go to www.bigredbarrel.com, facebook.com/bigredbarrel, or twitter.com/bigredbarrel, or bit.ly/ BRB Discord or Discord BRB one of these weeks, I should really look which one it is.
Which way round it is.
Or you could just go to the front page of bigrowbarrel.com and just jump on in there. So that's your lot. We're done.
Yes. Can I just add into the end of that? Also, be sure to chuck your questions over to Big Red Barrel on Twitter or Facebook. Or if you prefer a more direct approach, and as I tend to write these things out myself, at Dammit Coleman on Twitter.
Any limitations to what those questions can be?
Nah, it can be about games. It can be about what we had for lunch. I don't mind.
Wow, that's the full gamut of questioning right there.
That's the full gammon if you're feeling...
Depends
what you had for lunch, really, I guess. Full gambit if you want to talk about Marvel comic books.
Do I?
Yes.
Not really.
Don't encourage him.
Punisher?
Punisher. Tim, don't encourage the man. Don't encourage the man. Great. We're going to go now. Yes, son, we are. That's your lot. Thank you for listening. And I have been Dan.
I might have been Tim.
Woo! Coleman, that's me. That was me. I was me.
You were you.
I can't think of any Catan jokes. I've used them all.
Well, good job you didn't go off on a Catangent rightly in the episode.
That'd be great to end just there.
Yeah, so let's do that. Alrighty, so we're going to go now. Thank you ever so much for listening. And until next time, dear listeners, toodle-bye.
Your ears are quite welcome
for the podcasting goodness that you just heard.
Why not roll on over
to BigRedBarrel.com
for more podcasts,
news, reviews, and videos from the biggest, reddest site on the internet, BigRedBarrel.com.